All right, we are live on the audios. All of the audios are live. I'm going to give Roger control.
Control, control, present.
Over what, though? How much control?
Over everything. Oh, my gosh, we've got too far.
Things would work just the same.
Would they?
You'd spend all your time complaining about things to... You know, too much time complaining to do anything.
To me?
Yeah. You're a curmudgeon, aren't you?
They're productive curmudgeons. Make it seem that I can't do something while I'm complaining. Like if I'm complaining...
You're the one who said nothing would change. I'm just saying,
from a viewer perspective, nothing would change. It would be the same show.
Ah, in that sense, okay. I thought if we gave you control over everything, nothing would change. I'd be like, come on, man, you can at least like fix the Middle East. I don't know.
Something.
It is as it is.
Ultimately it's all because of a very good reason.
I don't believe in good or bad reasons. I just believe in reasons. it's not that I'm cynical, but it's like things I used to think were bad actually turned out to be good for me, and things I thought I was doing that were positive for my health. For example, my gout. Before I was like on a spinach, broccoli, cauliflower, mushrooms, turkey. Turkey was low fat. It was a good beef substitute. Turns out all this stuff just adds to my gout. It's like the trifecta of gout inflammation. Everything I was doing was wrong. These green leafy vegetables I was told was going to make me healthy and strong merely caused me pain and anguish. And so I was like,
that's not good.
I give up. It's just like, whatever.
He just eats cupcakes all day long.
I eat hamburgers rolled up in pizzas. They actually make that. They sell that. So get this. In Canada, there's a pizzeria chain called Boston Pizza.
Okay.
And I've yet to get anyone to give me a good explanation on why it's referred to as Boston Pizza, since Boston is... and pizza aren't two things you normally ever associate with each other.
In Hiroshima, I found a Boston bakery.
That makes sense, though. Like Does Boston it, though? Cream pie, which is a cake.
They didn't sell Boston cream pies, though.
Which is a cake. I mean, that's the
thing. I think things you find in Japan that are supposed to be Western, be they culinary or otherwise, usually do not make sense.
Mostly true in the United States in reverse as well.
I guess so.
With some exceptions, yeah.
You mean when they call that tasty, delicious buffet and it's anything
I'm not saying the Chinese restaurant in Greenville, Illinois isn't got any value to it, but it certainly isn't what I think of as Chinese food. And I know that what I think of as Chinese food from San Francisco isn't what you get when you go to China. So
it depends on what you order. Really, it's there are certain ingredients that you cannot get because they're endangered.
The ones that every chef tries to get on the side.
As a ethnically Chinese guy that lives in the U.S., that's a U.S. citizen, an American citizen, I've always been curious on various takes of like popular Chinese food. For example, when I was in Massachusetts, driving through Massachusetts, I wanted to find a place that sold chow mein sandwiches, because that's a thing. It's just literally chow mein that's fried into a sandwich.
Right, right.
Something
I've had those in Hawaii, actually.
I wanted to try one. I was just thinking it's just carb with carbs in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
Usually it's a carb, meat, vegetable, a very small vegetable, and maybe a pickled item, and then the other side of the bread.
You know what I never had in Japan was a Mos Burger.
Those are good.
Oh,
those
I know.
Are really good.
Well, I saw several locations. I just never did.
Yeah, you have to. It's, you know, the Japanese burger chain thing.
Yeah.
You use real Japanese moss.
What? Yeah, as well. So what did you go to Sin Monten Gyoza in the end or not?
Mm-hmm. I sent you a
what
picture.
Did you think? Oh, was it the Sin Monten? No, that was Gyoza.
Oh, wait, no, that wasn't Sin Monten. You're right. That was another place you recommended.
I know my Gyoza.
Yeah. No, I guess we didn't go to Sin Monten then.
You have to go back.
That was in Eileen's hands.
You've betrayed Patrick.
Yeah. Well, you went to Gyoza Ro, so it's I wouldn't say acceptable, but you get kind of a pass because I don't know.
That was in Harajuku, I think, right?
Yes, yeah, exactly. Yeah. Senmonten was in Kyoto, and that's the best gyoza ever made.
Why didn't we go to Senmonten then?
Well, Kyoto, you have lots of things to do. That one was the most important, but I guess you don't.
Our friend was really into trying to see the geisha going to work, so we spent quite a long time just wandering around.
Like, were you just stalking them?
You were in the neighborhood too. It was right there.
I know. That's what made me think of it. That was night that we spent an inordinate amount of time wandering around as Liz was like, "Oh, I think that one might be one in a cab." It was cute. I mean, I wasn't going to throw stones because if it had been like some other thing that I'm really passionate about, I would have been acting the same way. So yeah, I was fully supportive. But we did spend a lot of time doing that. And then what did we end up eating? Oh, we went to a tonkatsu place. And that was the first night after I had the flu. And so I was really picky about what I could eat. And we found this great tonkatsu place there.
Mm, nice.
It restored my health.
Oh, did you go to Ichiran, the ramen place?
No, Eileen kept trying to get us to go to Ichiran. We went to a similar place in Tokyo, in Shinjuku, not the actual Ichiran.
Okay.
But it was, it was the vending machine with the divided.
Right. Okay.
It was it was good. It had like a 9.1 on Foursquare, so.
Oh, that's okay. Yeah, I want to go back now.
It was near the robot restaurant.
Robot.
How was that?
It's under new management, and I thought it was the robots fun.
Aren't.
But Eileen has been twice now, and Eileen was like, "They took a lot out."
Ah.
Because she had seen it when it was still under the previous management.
See, that's what you don't want to hear. You don't want to hear that you finally get to some place and all the stuff you were hoping to see isn't there anymore.
So I enjoyed it. Like, I had a good time. But there were long breaks. And she's like, they didn't have these long breaks before.
Ooh, did you see, by the way, where I am?
Did I see
in
what?
Paris?
Yes, I am in Paris. It's my old studio apartment.
Oh, yeah.
From Paris.
So wait, how did you get that?
I'm going to start our video so people can actually see.
It's mine. It's my own. It's own 20 square meters in the world. Once I'm done paying for another 10 years. Yes.
It's partially the banks, I guess.
Do you Airbnb when you're not there?
No, it used to be rented.
Oh. So you rented it out and then the tenants aren't there.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's the OG.
It's a whole lot of memories. That's where I used to be when I did Buzz Out Loud live when, back in the day.
Wow.
DTNS and no, not DTNS. TNT and all of this.
Together drop of the week.
I don't know that song. Not sure I want to.
You don't want to know memories now.
Wait, I didn't read the things.
You got 2 minutes.
Okay. 1 minute. AdBlock Plus is opening an ad marketplace that allows websites to choose acceptable ads. Okay, sorry. there was a typo that I didn't correct.
See? See? This is why you're a pro.
What's happening? What's happening? Yeah, but I didn't. Well, we'll have to see what happens.
All right. Do you need another minute?
No, go ahead. Preparedness, that's for suckers.
All right, here we go, ladies and gentlemen. Bye, Roger.
The Daily Tech News Show is brought to you by listeners like me. To find out more, visit dailytechnewsshow.com/support.
This is the Daily Tech News for Tuesday, September 13th, 2016. I'm Tom Merritt. Joining me today, from Paris, actually, Mr. Patrick Beja, back in his original location.
Hey, so yeah, I have to be French sometime, right? At some point, I have to live up to my reputation. Also, I like to relax with a nice glass of bourbon, as you noticed before we started.
For a relaxing time, make it Centauri time.
Yeah, that's just tea.
Hey, it is. Oh, you blew the whole illusion. I was going to say, hey, it's 10 o'clock where you are, right?
Totally. Somewhere.
Yeah. Well, YouTube launched a community tab in beta for a limited number of creators Tuesday. Bruce Schneier wrote a very alarming column alerting people that some organization that is unidentified has been conducting calibrated denial of service attacks against key pieces of internet infrastructure in a pattern that looks like probing defense capabilities. In other words, someone's trying to learn how to take down the internet, in Bruce Schneier's opinion. Now here are some more top stories. Apple made iOS 10, tvOS 10, and watchOS 3. Why didn't they just call it watchOS 10? I mean, why not? It's not really the 10th tvOS either. Anyway, all three of those are available Tuesday. iOS 10 runs on the iPod Touch 6th generation, the iPhone 5, the iPad Mini 2, and the iPad 4th gen, and of course the newer models. It features a redesigned control center, new lock screen, widget screen, Siri SDK for devs to put it into third-party apps, the Home app, which will show up on your home screen for HomeKit and more. The Messages app now has an app store to buy stickers and other enhancements. You can hide that home screen, that Home app, and all the other default apps if you want. WatchOS 3 brings battery life enhancements, app caching, and instant launch. tvOS 10 brings Siri integration and a dark mode, and it's supposed to bring single sign-in, though that does not appear to be available at launch. Before you rush to update, though, keep in mind some users reported that their iPhones went into recovery mode when they attempted an over-the-air update to iOS 10. Apple told Renee Ritchie it had an issue in the first hour affecting a small number of users, but it is now resolved. I was able to update mine over the air without a problem. If you were affected, though, Apple recommends completing the update through iTunes. So we've already had our first controversy of this particular OS release, Patrick. Get it out of the way quick.
Well, so friends of mine were asking if the battery life was good or not with iOS 10, and a very cheeky friend of mine answered, well, as long as the battery doesn't explode.
Yeah, well, so batteries do not apparently explode. Also, Samsung batteries don't really explode. They just catch fire. Like
that is true.
We'll have a message about this. About that. I'm just saying.
We have a message about this later show. Yeah. But I upgraded as well, and I started the never-ending work of procrastination with Giphy in iMessages. And I think that's going to be the end of me. But you didn't get a chance to weigh in on the iPhone 7. Just very quickly, in a couple of words, what did you think?
Unnecessary for most people. That is my right. And this has been my review of the last couple iPhones, so it feel like a broken record at this point. But this feels like if you have an iPhone 5 or 5S, then yes, this is definitely worth an upgrade. If you have an iPhone 6, maybe not. Kind of depends on whether you're just getting tired, but you could probably do fine. There's no major features in this that I feel like I must have. I almost skipped it myself. The only reason that I did order an iPhone 7 was because I feel it's important for me to try living without the headphone jack so that I can have an opinion about that.
And that's excellent. I can ask you because I'm not getting it. So.
Yeah. I don't think most people need to have it.
Yeah. So iOS. Cool, I guess.
It's out. Hooray.
It's out. Woohoo. Let's hit our mics to celebrate. AdBlock Plus is opening an ad marketplace that allows websites to choose acceptable ads that will replace allegedly ugly or intrusive ads for users of AdBlock Plus. Acceptable ads do not track users and are limited in dimensions and page location. Publishers get 80% of their revenue. AdBlock Plus keeps 6, and the rest goes to the ad-serving companies. The ad marketplace launches today in beta.
So this is a brilliant business plan. Go and block ads from places and then sell ads to replace those ads. Like, the thing genius.
Yes, it's very clever. It's very difficult to be 100% for or against it because ultimately, however unethical you think it is, and I think it's very questionably, it's very questionable at least, there is an issue that in theory they are addressing. If, you know, they're doing a job that no one else seems to be able to do, which is setting a standard of acceptable ads. Because one of the issues, of course, you know, some people just use ad blockers because they don't want any ads. But some people might think, well, if the ads weren't tracking me everywhere and they weren't so intrusive that it would disrupt my browsing, then I would be okay with ads. And it's so, yeah, I don't know what to think about this. On one hand, I'm sort of half disgusted by Adblock Plus doing this, which is like a mob mafia type of thing to do. But on the other hand, the result seems to be not too bad. So,
yeah, there's a lot of moving parts here. First of all, users aren't required to use Adblock Plus. So I've seen people comparing this to ISPs inserting ads into, page not found, 404 pages. It's not like that, because you have to use your ISP to display pages that you don't find. You have a choice. You don't have to use Adblock Plus. You can use another ad blocker. And in fact, I feel like a lot of people will look at this and go, well, wait a minute, now I might get more ads. And the whole point of an ad blocker was not to see any ads for some people. Some people just want to stop the annoying ads and they'll be fine with this. But some people really just don't want to see any ads at all. They're going to want to use a different ad blocker. So it's not like Adblock Plus is blocking all of the ads in existence, you know? Still, the majority of people don't use ad blockers. And of the people who use ad blockers, not all of them use Adblock Plus. So it isn't as much of a, you know, tight-fisted grab on ads as possible. And you can also make the argument that Adblock Plus is doing what the advertising industry should have done already. And it's a long way around to it, but it's saying, hey, you guys, there is a customer pressure not to have these intrusive ads that get in the way and sometimes possibly deliver malware. We will be the middleman that protects you from yourselves. You can't resist taking the money for these risky ads, so we'll stand in the way. We'll give you 80% of the profits from it, but we'll provide that service for you that resists the temptation.
You know, looking at it like this, as a middleman that guarantees the nature of the ads, it's a lot more acceptable. I still think 6% is a lot for that kind of service. But if you don't look at it as a mob mentality, a mob action of we're holding you up and give us 6%, or we just display no ads on your content. But if you think of it as we'll be the one that guarantees you the user and you, the publisher, can find an acceptable compromise, and we'll make sure that the ads fit that compromise. It is kind of a valuable service,
yeah,
when you put it like that.
Well,
so,
and it's really not that different from what Google is doing or Facebook is doing with their fast loading pages for mobile, where they say we will provide a faster page as long as you limit what kinds of ads and where you place them. The difference is they're not serving those ads, or if they are, it's because they're served anyway. It's the publisher that's more in control. So the difference is Adblock Plus is taking the control of the ads a little bit away from the publisher here.
Right. And not just a little bit. Well, they're just deciding for them. That's the big issue. They're just saying, now you don't have a choice.
Advertisers do, if they participate in the program, they get to choose what kinds of ads show up, and they get a little bit of that control back. So
if they participate.
The other issue is, okay, let's say we look at this and go, well, you know, it is a good thing. Adblock is sort of the mediator between angry customers and angry publishers. Let's look at it as a positive for everybody. What stops Adblock Plus from going farther down this road? They used to be a providing an app that blocked ads. Now they're an app that not only whitelists ads, but also sells ads. At what point do they start delivering ads that the customers are saying, wait a minute, that's intrusive? And Adblock Plus is like, well, yeah, but it's not as intrusive as they used to be. You know, I mean, it's a slippery
slope. Sure, but people have a choice to not use Adblock Plus and go to another one. You know, that's always a possibility. I think another interesting way they could go, and we have to move on, so I'll be quick, would be getting customers to pay something and then redistribute this to the publishers for no ads.
Yeah, and that's been floated out there before as well. So, in any case, advertising industry not real pleased with the idea of somebody just popping right in and doing this. Samsung thinks it knows why its Note 7 batteries are at risk of fire. Bloomberg says that in a report to South Korea's technology standards agency, Samsung concludes a production error placed pressure on plates in battery cells, bringing negative and positive poles into contact, thus causing excessive heat. And Samsung says it needs more analysis to determine the exact cause. Samsung also announced a software update for unreturned Note 7s that will come September 20th and limit those devices to 60% charge capacity. Remember, there was someone said that Samsung had told them they would disable the Note 7s. That is not being confirmed by Samsung, but they will limit charge capacity to 60% as a way to try to prevent overheating. Samsung really would like you to just turn the thing in, though. This is that 60% charge capacity limit is for people who are refusing to turn it in. They would rather you just go get in touch with your retailer or wherever you bought it and figure out how to return the phone. Samsung will switch battery suppliers for replacement Note 7s. China's Amperex Technology Limited, or also called ATL, will become the main supplier of batteries. ATL supplied 30% of the current Note 7 batteries, with Samsung's own SDI subsidiary providing the majority, and it's believed that the SDI-provided batteries are the defective ones. ATL also supplies parts for Apple. ATL is owned by Japan's TDK, and Samsung not only having to fight the bad perception of the Note 7s, but now also having to assure investors SDI will continue to make batteries for our own products and others. This doesn't mean that we're killing our own battery business either. It's a temporary measure.
Right. There's such an interesting case of crisis management. There's, again, a couple of messages down the line in the show about this, so I'll refrain from commenting.
Yeah, we'll talk. We got some emails from people who are Note 7 enthusiasts and what they feel about it. But from the perspective of how bad is this for Samsung, do you think this is the worst day, having it come out what happened, having it come out that your own battery subsidiary is probably at fault, and having to say we're going to limit the existing Note 7s to charging capacity? These are all horrible things for Samsung to have to do. They're the right things to do.
Yeah. No, I think Samsung has done. There's been questions of how clear the recall has been, and that was not great. But the worst day was when airline companies were asking people not to use their phones. I think that couldn't have been worse. This is all not positive, but it's more towards finding solutions and explanations. So perception-wise, I think those are all, you know, in the context of the crisis, it's all positives.
Yeah.
Now, you know, I think there's no question that the worst quote unquote day of Samsung's phone business, at least, and I think Samsung as a whole, has been this whole issue. And it doesn't, as we'll discuss later, it absolutely doesn't mean that, you know, they won't recover, or even that the Note brand or the Note 7 product is not going to recover. It's still the worst possible thing that could happen. Well, not the worst possible, but the worst thing that has ever happened.
Yeah. Absolutely. And Big Jim, our resident logistics expert in the audience, pointed out that, you know, you are being told to keep your Samsung Note 7s off on passenger airplanes. Cargo airplanes are prohibited from carrying shipments of Note 7s at this point. There's a question of, will they be allowed to carry the replacement Note 7s? That is unclear. And if they can't, how are they? Then it's going to take quite a bit longer for Note 7 replacements to come overseas from Korea, not only because shipping takes a long time, and Big Jim says that usually you have to book 3 weeks in advance for shipments on boat, but Hanshin just went bankrupt. So the capacity for shipments out of Korea, because it's a Korean shipping company, is also limited right now. So all kinds of hurdles that Samsung is going to have to negotiate here.
And this is why it's so good that they know, or they're now saying, we know what happened, we know how to fix it, we are going to, because hopefully they can put the fixed ones on planes quickly to their customers. Sony's PS4 update version 4.0, codename Shingen, released Tuesday. Menu screens got a tweak. Users can organize things into folders. Thank God. And the PS4 can now play games in HDR and stream games to YouTube and Twitch in 1080p. Amazing. The new slimmer PS4 comes out Thursday the 15th, and the 4K game capable PS4 Pro arrives November 10.
This is a big update for PS4, especially the folders bit, because if you use your PS4 in any amount, you start to get a pretty unwieldy main page there.
Yeah, it seems like it's kind of silly that the folder is the big feature here. HDR, if I'm not mistaken, can only be used with HDR capable TVs,
yes,
right?
That's right.
So obviously that's not going to be for everyone, and those TVs are very rare, and the games aren't really available yet anyway, the updates, the HDR updates anyway. So yeah, the menus, they're great. And yeah, you can name your folders with funny names. I saw one that put all of his very, you know, manly first-person shooters. The folder was called Angry Men with Guns. I think that was very appropriate. It was funny.
Yeah,
it made
yeah.
me laugh anyway.
Good stuff. And the HDR is future-proofing, so that if you have a PS4 now and you replace your TV with an HDR4 or an HDR-capable TV, then you'll already be able to play HDR when the games come, which will also have to happen as well.
Yeah. Just very quickly about the PS4 Pro, as we did for the iPhone 7. I'm skipping the iPhone 7, I believe, and I'm skipping the PS Pro, the PS4 Pro. Yeah. I don't have a 4K TV, so as much of a huge fan of PlayStation 4 as I am, I don't see the need to upgrade at all.
Yeah, I think it's interesting that Sony had an announcement the same day as Apple, and they have their operating system update coming the same day as Apple. They don't have the hardware shipping.
Anything?
The hardware is shipping on a different date, but otherwise, yeah.
Yeah, it might, you know, there is some kind of star alignment there.
Yeah,
might have.
Do they think it's
meaning.
Good to surf in on all of that excitement somehow?
I think it might mean that some dates with some alignments of stars and things like that are better for software updates.
So what you're saying is we need to get to the bottom of who Silicon Valley's resident astrologist is that has been advising these technology companies. Back on August 18th, we told you about the U.S. Department of Commerce's decision to transition the IANA, that's the Internet Assigned Numbers Agency, which runs the domain name system, to a multi-stakeholder model while still under ICANN. It's a little bit of a complicated thing. ICANN has been running the IANA and therefore the domain name system by contract to the Department of Commerce, although ICANN is not contracted itself to the Department of Commerce. They needed a multi-stakeholder model to govern the IANA and therefore continue to contract it to ICANN. So ICANN continues to run the DNS through the IANA, but the Department of Commerce will no longer control the IANA as of October 1st. Well, some Congress people have been pushing forward a bill to overturn that and keep the IANA under U.S. control, although presumably still contracted to ICANN. Tuesday, a letter signed by several tech companies, including Google, Facebook, Amazon, and Twitter, called it imperative that Congress not delay the planned October 1st transition. Senator Ted Cruz will hold a hearing Wednesday to review the transition, which Senator Cruz has called a giveaway of our internet freedom.
So why is it important that the IANA comes out of U.S. control?
It is important to many worldwide organizations, and these tech companies are worldwide organizations, because there is a perception that the United States has more influence over domain name allocation than it should. There is a feeling that maybe we would have more non-English, non-Roman character domains. We would be able to do certain things if the U.S. wasn't in control. The fact of the matter is there hasn't been any negative fallout any that you could point to of U.S. control, except maybe there was a little bit of a kerfuffle over the .xxx domain, but honestly, that was resolved by ICANN, and they went against the prevailing wishes of the U.S. in resolving it. So for the most part, it hasn't played out that way, but everyone has just said we are uneasy with any one country having direct influence over any of these organizations that administer critical parts of the internet. And we think it should have a multi-stakeholder model that is not even part of the United Nations or any other one organization. They've created something that's very difficult, which is something that essentially doesn't answer to any one single major organization. What Senator Ted Cruz and others have said is, yes, but that leaves it open to influence from places that we don't agree with, like Iran, like China, that will try to crack down, to try to apply more domain name blocking, et cetera. And we think that the best thing to happen right now is for it to remain under the nominal Department of Commerce control, because, as it has been shown, nothing really controversial has happened under that control anyway, and this would be a firewall against other countries moving against the domain name system, theoretically.
Yeah, excellent explanation. Thank you very much. You basically included all of the things I would have argued against or for. So, but it's a case of the internet belongs to everyone, so let's make sure everyone is in control of it and not just the U.S., even though the U.S. hasn't done anything bad with it, some might say yet. I think the one thing I have a problem with is the phrasing of, I mean, I don't know if you remember, but when we were talking about giving ICANN a different stakeholders and making it more multinational stakeholder-y, my argument was exactly that, was, you know, do we want actors like China and Iran and, you know, others to be integrated in the decision-making pool? So essentially, I'm sort of agreeing with Senator Cruz. However, the phrasing of giveaway of our internet freedom, that is the kind of thing that raises flag for me everywhere, because it sort of seems like it's trying to incite the kinds of feelings that are not just rational and neutral. But ultimately, I understand where he's coming from.
Yeah, and there are many other organizations running other parts of the internet that are not beholden to any part of any other government. This is the one exception here. And I think that a lot of people just want to clean that up and say, let's make sure the internet is run multi-stakeholder in every possible way. On the other hand, I get where some people are going to look at this as, that makes me nervous. It is, even if it's just one part, it's an important part in the domain name system. And frankly, the biggest concern for me is securing the domain name system. As we mentioned earlier, Bruce Schneier says people are out there trying to figure out how to take down parts of the internet, and let's stop worrying about who is contracting whom here, and let ICANN and the IANA get on with the process of securing the domain name system. That is priority number one, and that's what they should be focusing on.
So I guess another way of putting that question is, do you want the internet to be controlled by the American government and administration, which I believe a large part of the American public does not trust to do anything right? So
that's an interesting dichotomy, isn't it? That some of the same people who claim not to trust the government to do anything would like the government to continue to be in charge of this. So,
So I'm just asking questions, people.
Just questions. Just asking. Yep.
On Monday, the U.S. House passed a bill that would make it illegal for companies to use provisions, to put provisions in customers' contracts that prevent customers from sharing honest opinions. Yes, you read that right. It does happen. The Consumer Review Fairness Act would nullify non-disparagement clauses and give the FTC the authority to take action against their attempted use. The Senate passed a version of the bill in 2015. It now goes back to the U.S. Senate for reconciliation before being sent to the president.
Yeah, so it's very likely to get passed. There's apparently like only a few words difference between the two versions, so it should be able to be reconciled very quickly, and the president is expected to sign it. So this will stop those lawsuits where, you know, you gave a bad review to a piece of software and someone tried to sue someone for $3,500 or $1 million in one case, or Airbnb people trying to say, no, you can stay in our house, but you can't leave us a bad review, which has been attempted one time as well. I find it hard to believe that existing law didn't already cover this somehow, but I suppose it's good to make it really explicit so that you don't have to fight it out in the courts.
Yeah, it seems so outrageous that it would need to be hammered down on the head very quickly. But I agree. I would think that existing law would cover that. Just for the fun of trying to see the other side of this, and I'm playing devil's advocate here.
So you're going to be Clear Gear, and you're going to say, it's right for me to charge a customer $3,500 for writing a truthful but negative review about me.
That is exactly what I'm attempting to do. No, I just want to point out that some negative reviews can destroy businesses, and it can be someone that is being untruthful, and by the time that you can sort it out, it doesn't really matter anymore because you were a young business and you just rubbed someone the wrong way, or they were just exercising their internet power of keyboarding into oblivion. And that was the end. You know, it influenced your business in a very negative manner just because someone had a bad day and wanted to take it out on someone else. So, yeah, I'm trying really hard to play devil's advocate here.
It's fair to say, like, you know, use your review powers for good. And there are such things as libel and slander laws that can be enforced, and those aren't getting any extra help. There's not an extra law that clarifies if you give an unfair review that's false, the FTC is going to step in. So this is leaning in one direction, which is protection of the consumer.
I guess the other way to take care of these things is to make sure that the business owner can respond to those reviews directly on all of these important
sites.
Most
of them,
and
you
that's
can, yeah.
A way to handle it. Yeah.
In fact, the best negative reviews I've seen are ones where the business owner responds in a very forthright way and says, hey, let me try to fix this for you. Here's what I think happened. Those bad reviews have less of a negative effect on me because I see the business trying honestly to resolve them. And so I'm more forgiving of those businesses. I mean, that is the best thing you can do, I think. Thanks to all those who participate in our subreddit. You can submit stories and vote on them at dailytechnewsshow.reddit.com. Join another Jay Martin, Oscar Buzz Out Loud, Androd HP, or Anurod HP, and others at dailytechnewsshow.reddit.com. And that's a look at the headlines. So several people have asked me to report on my experiment using T-Mobile roaming on an iPhone and Project Fi roaming on a Nexus 5X while I was traveling in Japan and Korea. And of course, I figured we'd do it on a day with someone who recently spent a month living in Japan and dealing with mobile
systems.
Three months. Yeah, absolutely. So here I'll start with my brief report, Patrick. In Japan, T-Mobile was acceptable. I maybe less than 1% of the time had a problem connecting. My major complaint, if I had one, was maybe 40%, 30 to 40%. It was slow. I felt like I was on a slower connection. And in fact, I talked with somebody who is in the know and said, yeah, essentially the way these roaming agreements work is if you're T-Mobile roaming on a SoftBank connection, all the SoftBank customers have priority in front of you. So even if you have 5 bars and you're looking slow, that's because everybody else is getting priority in front of you. But the majority of the time, it worked fine.
Just to be clear, the T-Mobile roaming was just regular cell service, data service roaming. How much did you pay for it?
You don't pay anything. It's free.
That is very cool.
Yeah.
Is it T-Mobile specific with John Legere being all?
Yeah, this is part of their big Un-carrier movement. You get a text message when you first connect in the country, and it says, you know, welcome to Japan. You can roam for free. If you'd like to buy priority service, you can do that, but you don't have to. And I assume if you buy the little data package, that just gets you faster service. But I never did it because I didn't need to. Plus the fact that in Japan, as you know, there are lots of public Wi-Fi hotspots that you can connect to. And that sort of eases the burden a little as well, especially in the touristy areas. Project Phi in Japan was blistering. I assume that this would be the experience if I paid T-Mobile for the little international upgrade. I had no problems anywhere in Japan with Project Phi. It was super fast again, LTE.
Can you explain what it is? Because I suspect that many non-American listeners might not know exactly what it is.
Yeah, sure. Project Phi is Google's service that you can only use on a few of their Nexus phones. So that's the downside to it is I can't use it. I can't just pop out that SIM card and put it in other phones. But it's a pay-as-you-go service. So you pay a minimum amount a month, but you only pay for what you use. And if you don't use it all, it gets credited forward. And they recently signed roaming agreements that allow LTE in large parts of the world. So again, I didn't have to pay anything extra. I'm paying my same amount per megabyte, per gigabyte, when I'm roaming. So I don't have unlimited data. I do have to think about that. But I also didn't have to pay extra because I was international. And I got incredibly fast service. It was certainly the best phone to use for browsing and things like that.
So this is the same price whether you're using it in the US, in Japan, or basically anywhere else?
Correct. It is. So both of these are not adding any cost to what I would normally pay.
And how much does Project Phi cost, data-wise?
You know what? I knew you were going to ask that, and I should have had this at the ready.
I mean, roughly, is it $10 per month?
Starts at $20 per month for just the basics, and then it's $10 per gigabyte of data. And that's just a flat fee. So if you use 3 gigabytes, then it's going to be $30 for that month.
So $20 includes no data. Base plan.
$20. The base plan, $20 per month includes unlimited talk, unlimited text, and the ability to use your phone as a Wi-Fi hotspot.
Okay.
And then it's always $10 per gigabyte for data above that.
And does it include those unlimited talk and text messages in any country as well?
Yep. Unlimited international texts.
Really?
Yep. Unlimited domestic talk, so you do get an extra charge on international phone calls.
But if you're in Japan, is it considered a domestic talk?
That's a good question. Like if I call somewhere in Japan, is that domestic? I'm gonna guess not. But I don't know what the charge is.
No one uses phones anyway.
So. Yeah, exactly. I just use Skype if that were the case and just get around it.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that's Japan. Project Phi wins hands down, but T-Mobile was entirely usable. And in fact, I use T-Mobile more than Project Phi just because I have some things on the iPhone that I could do and, like iMessage and stuff with my wife. I used it more often and it was fine. I never had big complaints. Korea is a whole different story. Project Phi was almost unusable in Korea. I got it to connect twice. And in both cases, when it connected, it worked okay, but it only connected for a small amount of time. I think the roaming agreements there are either not fully implemented or they're very spotty. Because we were in the Myeongdong section of Seoul, and I could not get a connection there ever, not once. I was able to get a spotty connection here and there, but it was unpredictable. So I might have been able to get it more often, but the places I checked most often, I wasn't getting a connection. T-Mobile, on the other hand, was weird. My wife has T-Mobile too. She didn't have this problem. She sort of had the same experience as Japan, although she felt like it was even slower more often than in Japan. My phone in Korea, I constantly had to reboot to get a connection. I would show that I had a connection, but the data just wouldn't work. And then I'd have to reboot or reset network settings. Then it would work for a while. And then eventually it would stop working again. Once I got back to Japan, that stopped happening. So something happened with my network settings in Korea that didn't play nice with the roaming.
Was it maybe a different type of, but then it would never work. I was thinking a different type of, LTE or 4G that your LTE chip wasn't managing as well.
Yeah, I mean, but Eileen has the same.
But then it wouldn't work, period.
Yeah. Eileen had a similar phone and she was working, it was working fine for her. So yeah, okay. I'm not sure what that was. I managed to get by and use it, but it was a little annoying to, twice a day have to reboot my phone to get a connection.
Okay. So I guess you were in two different countries, so it would be difficult anyway. But I was wondering if you had had a Wi-Fi, 4G router, wouldn't you have been happier? Wouldn't it have, would you have preferred to have that rather than one of those?
Yeah. In Japan, probably not. Just the inconvenience of having to have that extra piece of gear with me and turn it on and charge it wasn't enough to balance out the occasional slow speed on T-Mobile. So in Japan, I think I'm glad that I didn't get the mobile router. And certainly for Project Fi, I didn't need it at all. In fact, occasionally I was using Project Fi as my mobile router, but I tried not to do that too often because that eats up the data, and the data was free on the T-Mobile side. In Korea, though, absolutely. 100% wish I had gotten one of those mobile routers because the data was problematic.
Yeah. When I was in Japan, whenever I'm there, I order a 4G router, LTE 4G. You know, there are different types. And one was WiMAX. Actually, when I was there last, I had one LTE, one WiMAX. Both were great. WiMAX was a little bit more spotty for coverage, but it was surprisingly, they were a little bit bulky, but it was surprisingly, functional, and it would never run out of battery. I could do the whole day no matter what I did.
Oh, that's great.
On those bulky ones. And that has now become my favorite way of doing anything, data roaming or not even roaming, but when I go somewhere else, because the problem is you never really know how much it's going to cost you and how much data you can use. I mean, you get those messages, but then you can't really check how far along you are. I guess you get another message when you're reaching the end, but it's always too expensive. And those routers were relatively cheap. So for me, I think even with Project Fi seemed to be working well for you, but you still have that issue of, over 1 gig, you pay more. And I guess when I was in Japan, I was using it a lot. It was like using that for everything and not even worrying about Wi-Fi.
Yeah.
But then you have to worry about where you're connected, and so
I don't know, routers, splash screens, and stuff. Yeah, yeah. No, I think routers is probably still the way to go. If you have T-Mobile, I would say you probably don't need that expense of the router. You'll be fine.
In Japan.
I think the trade-off is there. If you're using something else, though, I mean, those routers that you rent, those are unlimited data?
Yeah, so it was a little bit weird. One of them was supposed to not be unlimited, and then I called them because it was... actually, they were supposed to send me a 3G unlimited one. I got an LTE, and I called them saying, hey, it was really important for me to get the unlimited, and they were like, don't worry, it's unlimited. Even though it's supposed to not be, and we upgraded you basically. And I was like, well, okay. It was unlimited and very, very fast. I mean, for cell connection, it was like, this is going to sound incredibly, snotty, but for me, 60, 70 megabits per second is not super fast anymore. I'm in that realm where it's like, yeah, it's good. It's nice.
I can do everything I need, but come on, you got to do better. Yeah.
Even in France, it's become really fast now.
Yeah,
but it was in those routers. This is why I'm thinking I don't need to worry about them a lot. It's because they're usually unlimited. They hold the charge for the entire day and more, and you plug them in when you get home, and they are blazing fast.
Yeah,
so
you're starting to convince me that maybe even in Japan, that would have been nice to have. Because the people I was traveling with could log into them as well, so we all would have had
exactly. You have one for everyone, and ultimately if you have multiple people, it becomes even cheaper than if you would use your Google Fi data. I guess,
because there was one person in our group, there were four of us traveling together, who was not on T-Mobile and was not getting data from time to time, and so that was difficult. But yeah, I mean, it's something where you still want to consider it, but it all depends on your plan. It does make things easier, though. Sort of wishing I'd done it. Certainly wish I had done it in Korea, but there you go. And just internet in general, before we wind up, it's crazy good. The Wi-Fi in hotels, I did cord killers off of without any incident. The Wi-Fi, the public Wi-Fi that I did log into around the country, in Japan and Korea both, was always more than acceptable, especially for public Wi-Fi, better than I would have expected. I think there may have been one or two spots where I had slow Wi-Fi because just a lot of people were using it. But even then, it was workable.
Just tested my provider in France. I have two bars on the phone, and it's the third, probably not the main one, the third in the country. 22 milliseconds ping, 36 megabits per second down, 5.47 up. Obviously, the 5.47, I think they limit it. But yeah, not too bad for a 4G connection. Yeah, they're capping you up, yeah. So yeah, even in France, I guess we have pretty good 4G connections now. All and right, I'm fine. In the middle of a very densely populated.
Since we're doing this, I'm going to...
Are you testing yours as well?
I'm going to have to launch speed test here and test mine. But while I do that, a couple of notes. One, Nick says that he will be getting a Samsung Galaxy Note 7 despite the bad press. Sees no reason to avoid it. Android security updates are critical, a critical feature. Products get recalled all the time. The problem gets fixed and the product goes back on sale. I don't see this as being any different. And then an anonymous person wrote and said, I work for Samsung in a retail location and I don't think the Note brand is going away anytime soon. The series engenders the kind of fanaticism that the iPhone does. We've had the majority of people with the phone state they want to stay in the Note line. It is to the point that our store even has more Note 7s on reservation waiting for the replacement batch than it does iPhone 7s on pre-order. There will surely be a dip in sales, most likely multi-year, but I personally don't think it's going to disappear.
Yeah, I definitely agree with both of those sentiments. Am I breaking up for you?
No, you're breaking up you're just good. A little bit.
Okay, cool. So yeah, I definitely agree with both of those emails, but I had a follower basically take me to task for saying that this is a nightmare scenario for Samsung and that, oh, it will, you know, everything will be great. And every manufacturer has issues like this, like you had the bandgate for Apple and you have issues like that. Certainly there are other issues for other manufacturers. But I think, and again, I agree that ultimately this will blow over. But in the world of PR and public perceptions, I really don't see how it's possible to have something worse than this happen for a manufacturer. I guess maybe the, who was it, Volvo falsifying their CO2 emissions reports.
Volkswagen, not Volvo.
Volkswagen, sorry, yeah, not Volvo. Oh, I'm sorry, the Swedish. I shouldn't say anything bad about them. The Swedes are perfect. But yeah, so that is even worse. But you really have to, you know, short of flooding a beach with oil and, you know, these kinds of things, that's worse, I agree. But short of that, if your phone bends in your pocket, it's terrible because it's your flagship, but it doesn't explode in a plane and gets your, you know, airline companies asking you not to use your phone in the thing because it might kill everyone. Of course,
Patrick, this is, I don't think anybody's arguing that it isn't bad. I think what these people are saying is everyone is starting to say no one will buy a Samsung phone anymore. And what these folks are saying is that's not true. And not only is that not true, people will buy Note 7s again. Yes, it's bad for Samsung, but there's a limit to how bad it is.
Yes, on that I definitely agree. Anyone saying, you know, people won't buy Samsung phones or even Note 7
anymore. Samsung's going to go out of business. I mean, I hear people saying that. That's just
That's crazy. That's ridiculous. I guess I was taken to task for saying that this is a nightmare scenario, and it definitely, definitely is a nightmare scenario.
I mean, if you could get any Samsung executive to talk on record, they would agree with you. This is not something that is pleasant for them, right? This is a very bad scenario. Yeah. Like, I don't think anybody denies that. I don't even want to read these. 27 milliseconds, 1.82 megabits per second down, 2.21 up on two bars of LTE.
What? Wait, how much?
You weren't listening, were you?
No, I was. You were breaking up. I'm not
1.82 down. Oh, I'm not going to repeat the rest because they're not any better. Real quickly.
Wait, no, actually, that's interesting. Is that common This
is usually better. I think it's just because I'm in my basement or something. I don't know. I'm always on Wi-Fi at home, so I never really realize it. But wow, that's two bars. It should be better than that. Magnus, the marketing guy from pleasantly chilly Norway, wanted to give us some information on Roe v. and TiVo regarding a comment on Monday's show that TiVo is expensive. He said, I wanted to give some additional background that might be relevant for the product development of TiVo going forward. In May 2015, TiVo bought QBware. QBware is well known in the industry for delivering fast and reliable user interfaces on cheap chipsets and set-top boxes. They've already started to integrate the search and recommendation engine from TiVo with their own middleware technology to deliver the TiVo experience to set-top boxes targeting the more price-sensitive markets, set-top boxes. So in other words, cheap boxes. Adding the patents from Rovi into this mix will only make them even more interesting going forward. I do believe that TiVo will develop a more affordable set of products and service offerings after the recent acquisitions.
There you go. I don't use TiVo, but I'm sure it's awesome.
I hope that we do see, as a result of both of those acquisitions / mergers, more affordable TiVos, because more competition is better. Get in there and compete. Apple TV is too expensive too. Roku's the right price point, in my opinion. Anyway, thank you, Patrick Beja, for joining us. Where can people find more? What's going on with you?
You know what? Not Patrick on Facebook and Twitter is the place to go if you want to have a little bit of conversation and explain to me why what I said in this show was so wrong. If you want to find shows that I host, you can go to frenchspin.com. You'll find Pixels, which is a gaming show, and the Phileas Club, which is a political discussion show with people from very different places. I'm sure you would enjoy both of those, so go check them out at frenchspin.com.
Thank you, everyone, for supporting the show. We exist because of you. You can find out how, if you're not already supporting us and you're willing to, at dailytechnewsshow.com/support or patreon.com/DTNS. Don't forget that driver Sakani Wright gives us a regular column on dailytechnewsshow.com with tips and news about ride sharing from the driver's perspective. His latest tips for a smooth pickup are right now at dailytechnewsshow.com. Go check them out. Our email address is feedback@dailytechnewsshow.com. Our show is live Monday through Friday, 4:30 p.m. Eastern at alphageekradio.com and diamondclub.tv. And our website is dailytechnewsshow.com. Back tomorrow with Scott Johnson. Talk to you then.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.
Good show.
Excellent.
What should we call it?
I'm actually not going to participate. I'm going to go.
Oh, no worries.
Okay.
Yeah, absolutely. Hope everything goes better.
Thank you very much. Thanks for the show. It was really fun, actually. So.
Oh, good. I'm glad. All right, take
care,
man. And
bye to the chat room. Love you all. Bye.
So at the top, we have World War IT.
Mm-hmm.
Note and catch fire. I think we cut.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, we did that. Project Fee's big in Japan.
Fi.
Project Fi. Take my Wi-Fi, please. Patrick, part-time Frenchman. They still make the iPod Touch. 10th times a harm.
Okay.
Ad by Plus. All your interwebs are belong to us, US. Bend it like Beja. House passes CRFA, gets good review. And nothing here really jumps out at me.
Yeah.
An ad block you can't refuse. That's kind of funny.
I feel like we may have done that before in an ad blocking story.
The kooky carrier.
I like Ad Buy Plus or Project Fi's Big in Japan. Those are both pretty good.
We'll do the one in Japan because that's more to the
It's different
discussion
and
topic.
More to the discussion. Cool. Done.
Done.
Easy.
Easy peasy, fresh and cheesy. Let me see. Waiting back to hear from Allison. Comedy, more pinball, volunteer.
What are you saying?
Oh, the Pinball Museum is looking for volunteers.
Oh, That sounds fun. So what do? You just volunteer to walk around and make sure everybody's having a good time?
I guess people aren't beating on the machines, I guess. I don't know. Every third Friday, Tilt, stand-up comedy and storytelling. Oh, are they turning it into a spoken word venue?
It's or an open mic. So,
yeah.
Sushi with a side of LTE is pretty good, too. Tendon. Tonkatsu.
You know, that's the thing, though. I can only eat those in small amounts. Like, I couldn't eat it more than maybe a couple of times a month. I don't know why.
Which ones?
Tonkatsu or... I don't know about... Korean food, I could probably eat more of. But, like, Japanese, maybe because I'm just at that point where it's like...
Too much fried?
Well, it's weird because it's...
There's a lot of unfried. There's a lot of not fried food in Japan.
Oh, yeah.
Most of
it's not fried.
Yeah.
But tonkatsu, it's like, once or twice. It's weird because it's a Portuguese thing that they brought over.
The ramen, I had tsukumen, which is the dipping noodles.
Those are great.
The noodles were insane. I mean, the broth was great too, but the noodles, I dream about those noodles. They were so good.
They're natural. You know what it is? We're so trained by like instant ramen and whatever passes for ramen. And
I'm not.
You don't think so?
Well, no, because I don't eat that instant ramen anymore. And we have good fresh noodle shops here in my neighborhood. So I'm comparing it to a little bit of a higher level noodle, I think. Certainly than top ramen.
Hard to say.
Yeah.
Could be the water.
Could be
the flour that they use.
It could be the flour, yeah.
Because the flour recipe, I'm sure.
Maybe
is
it's
different.
Just the love.
Yeah, but that's just a catch-all phrase for not being technical or divulging any real information. So what did you do to this sandwich to make it so delicious? Love. No, really, like, what's the ingredients?
No, seriously, give me your recipe. that's what happened. I chose the wrong thing. I was like, why isn't this working? It's because I chose export instead of import. That doesn't work.
Although, to be generally, I'm not super big on Japanese food as I used to be.
Oh, really? Big fan. And I'm a big fan of Korean food, too. Especially that Korean barbecue, bulgogi.
All the meat stuff. All the meated stuff.
We eat way more protein than we need, but I just like it.
I think we're geared to like it. Although, you know, like, I have my limits. Like, there's a point where it's like, okay, I'm done with the meat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I didn't eat as much protein-type dishes on this trip because there's a lot more protein-light. Like the ramen, you know, you can order it without any meat or you can order it with just a little bit of pork. But it's not like you're loading up on it.
I think the thing about Japanese is they share similar ingredients to various other dishes. Not the same ingredients in each dish, but like they'll have one or two that they have. I think maybe, I don't know. That's why I used to hate like your standard quote unquote Chinese food that you would get at like your local Chinese restaurant, because they only did a very narrow range of food, and they all had like the same stuff in it. It just tasted the same after a while.
Yeah, they just repurposed the same six ingredients in different combinations. That's not the real thing.
I've been super into Middle Eastern food, though.
It's good stuff.
I used to hate like couscous and stuff like that because it just didn't taste like anything. Till you actually get it made into something that is good, it tastes good.
You gotta eat it the proper way, I think.
And I used to not. It's not that I didn't like hummus. I used to be very easy on the hummus until you actually get like fresh made hummus. It's like whoa.
Mm-hmm.
It's like creamy. It's great.
Yeah, and really well made falafel.
Oh, yeah. You know why? Because I am a fan of well-made falafels because so many places give you like these weird, like borderline inedible meteorites. Mm-hmm. They call falafels that are really hard to chew.
It's like most food. If you have the wrong version of it, you'll think you don't like it. You got to get the.
Then you come off like being a snob. It's like, oh, I don't like the way they make it. That's not the style.
I
prefer.
About burgers. Like, I actually went off burgers for a long time because I was like, I don't like fast food burgers. I'm not going to pick on any particular chain. All of them tasted pretty much the same to me because they had these thin meat patties that didn't taste like anything. Then I started having real burgers made like at real places, and I changed my mind.
I love real burgers.
Now I love eating burgers.
But I just, you know, I've learned to not to eat too much of one thing. And so I just like stop and I'll have to move on to something else. Like for a while I would only eat, you know, chicken salads or salads with some sort of protein mixed in.
Yeah.
It's weird. But I can't do that since I'm not at a location that.
You could make them.
I could, but that would take effort with a kid. It's hard to make stuff like that with a kid running around and grabbing you.
Yeah, it's hard to get the motivation up. Because you have to have focus and you keep getting interrupted, right?
It's like a martial art.
Okay, I'm uploading.
Oh, I don't like Panera, though, Big Jim. I know this sounds sacrilegious, but I don't like Panera.
Even I like Panera. Come on, man.
I don't like their, you know, this is the thing. I'm very picky about bread.
Oh, yeah. Like, you know, I actually, as weird as this is going to sound, I don't get a lot of bread things at Panera.
Oh. What do you get? I'm trying to think of, like the soups.
Yeah, there's the soups and some of the breakfast sandwiches, which I know have bread. But
oh, I haven't tried those.
I'm mostly getting them. They're like English muffin bread, right? So I'm getting them for the filling.
I have been spoiled because I've just started buying the Dave's Killer Bread at Costco.
Oh, yeah.
Instead of like the regular Oro Wheat or whatever. And I cannot eat any other pre-sliced bread.
I don't eat bread.
Jen eats a lot of it, and I eat it occasionally with sandwiches, but that bread is good. Like, he really killed someone. I mean, granted, he used to be
That's your recommendation, is that he really killed someone?
Well, he didn't kill anyone, but he was arrested. He was borderline about to kill someone when he broke into a home. He has this big story on the side of the package of how he started. But yeah, you know, I'm sure maybe he ground the bones of his victims into the flour, but it's tasty.
But at some point that would run out.
Well, then there's always more victims, Tom.
I suppose that's true. Yeah.
It's an
inexhaustible resource.
Well, what's interesting is Costco sells it for $8 for two loaves. And typically that's how much it costs in the store for one. So I finally found a reason to go to Costco and buy groceries. That bread, watermelon slices.
That's how they get you.
I know.
Yeah, I haven't gone to a Costco in a long time.
And toilet paper.
I just haven't found it worth the effort.
You make it worth the effort, Tom.
For the $3 I'd save on toilet paper.
I've tried doing all the other stores shopping for toilet paper. Costco's hands down the best place to get it. In bulk, in price, and the quality of the paper against your ass. It's perfect. And I don't go for
you
the
start a podcast.
I think there already are Costco podcasts.
No, just specifically on toilet paper shopping.
I'm in diapers. We Pampers at Walmart. Yeah, you know, we get the Pampers Cruisers. I get them at Target because they're always occasionally on sale.
Oh, so that's not something that's better at Costco.
Well, the ones we got, they were Ozil fitting the Costco brand. Like, they didn't fit.
Gotcha.
And so we just stuck with Pampers because when the kid pees, the last thing you want to do is leak out.
The daily test.
And if they can't.
It's a talk.
Okay.
With a dark redeemer.
I believe I have successfully published the show. That is my belief. I'm going to persist in this belief till someone tells me otherwise.
I will not dissuade you from it.
Thank you, sir. And thank you all for watching. It's good to be back still. We'll be back again tomorrow, even, because it's so good to be back. Talk to you then.